You're tuned to DIY Portland, a monthly show about revolutionary do-it-yourself projects. I'm Julie Sabatier. It's going to happen to everyone, but no one knows exactly what it is. Death. It's waiting there for all of us. Not to be too dramatic, but you know, it's death. It's there. And we might as well think about it and talk about it, because we all have questions. Perhaps the only question we can answer is what will happen to our bodies after we die. We can make those arrangements ahead of time, while we're still here, with the help of our family and friends. Patricia Sweeney knows what she wants. She knows she wants a simple funeral in her home. She knows she wants her friends to wash her body. And she knows what songs she wants played as her community gathers to remember her. A year ago, Patricia started seeking out the resources for her family to make these seemingly simple arrangements. That's when she stumbled upon the growing home funeral movement, which is trying to revive this traditional way of dealing with death in the United States. Patricia was inspired to share what she learned by becoming a death care educator.
I call myself a death care guide and educator. That's my basic title. And I am the founder of The Spiral of Life, which is a new business I'm creating that's in-home wakes and funerals.
And how many, I know this is a new business for you, but how many funerals have you participated in as an educator?
I have not participated in any home funerals yet. This is available right now, but it requires people to ask for it. So nobody has asked for it yet.
I want to talk quickly about the legality of home funerals and how does that work in Oregon?
Well, that's a great question because that's always the first question people ask. And that can be really set to rest very simply. In the Oregon laws, it's completely legal to take care of your own family members. In that case, you would be the person acting as the funeral service practitioner. And the only prerequisite to that is you would have to have the legal right to the disposition of the body.
Well, so if someone dies in the hospital, you have every right as a family member, immediate family, to go there and collect the body in your own vehicle and bring it home.
Absolutely. If they give you any pressure, you could call someone like myself. That's the business we're in, to help produce the law for them, or a lawyer you could call if there was resistance. Basically, I think our culture looks at death care with a very narrow vision and in a very habitual way. And part of my education workshops is to really expand their idea and concept of what's actually possible. So the home funeral is on one end of the spectrum, you know, the full-on complete home funeral. And then at the other end of the spectrum, I'm really just trying to get people to participate or touch it in some way.
And I understand it that legally you don't have to embalm the body unless you're taking it across state lines. Is that right?
Well, almost. If you have a communicable disease, would need to be required by law to be embalmed.
And so you would skip that step for the home funeral.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you want to be embalmed, you would need to go to a licensed funeral home where they have licensed embalmers.
Let's say someone doesn't meet one of those special requirements where they have to be embalmed. What do you have to do with the body?
If they died at the hospital, of course, or at the nursing home, the first thing you have to do is a doctor or a medical examiner has to sign the death certificate. If they're at home, you have to get the doctor to either come out or have hospice help you with getting that death certificate signed. So that's really step one and very key. Once the body is at home, you can wash the body, dress the body. There's many different things that are sort of optional, up to you, but you might want to close the eyes, set the jaw a little bit using a scarf or something like that. And then you would want to make sure that the body's in a room that's not going to be overheated. So you have to think about what month of the year is it. You know, if there's heat on in the house, you might turn off the heat in that room. And then you would want to get a coolant, refrigerating the body. So in home funerals, we use dry ice.
And then what?
Then, you know, you have the decisions to make whether you're taking the body to a cemetery or to a crematory. Let's say the body is lying in the bedroom. You know, at that point, the community, the family, or friends would pick up the body and place that body in a container, whether that is a casket of some sort. There's a full range of different casket choices, all the way to a cardboard box that's been decorated. And then you would carry that casket and that body out to the transportation, which could also be your own vehicle. There's no state law against driving that body of your deceased in your own vehicle. This can be tailor-made. Basically, there are very few restrictions, and we just don't realize that as a culture, that we have a lot of creative motion in this. We're just not used to being creative around death.
Can you tell me about more about the options for a partial home funeral?
Yeah, I think that's a great choice. In my father's own case, my father died this year, and because I have done all this research and read, when I went home to his funeral, his wife had brought him to a very corporate-style funeral home. And I walked in and introduced myself, and I just said, this is my father, and I would really like to participate. I would like to help dress him. You know, I'd like to help casket him and wash his body. And there was no resistance. They were just very open. They said, if you would like to do that, be here at 8:30, you know, tomorrow. And I showed up and I got to participate in that. And that was a really powerful experience for me. And the other thing is the casket. You know, we spend $2,000 to $5,000 to $10,000 for a casket. And just remembering, you know, reminding people that there's no law saying that you can't make your own casket. And we've almost forgotten that. And that the funeral home can't charge you extra if you bring your own casket. So you can, you know, if there's a carpenter in the family, that might be a really healing thing for them to do. Another idea, you could also, you know, ask to be present at the crematory when someone's being cremated.
What are some of the benefits of a home funeral for the family?
I think it's a large benefit to actually get closer to death than we do as a culture. It's a little place where we hold a whole lot of fear, the fear of death. So I think that once you can walk through that door of getting close to it, of touching it, of taking care of it, it sort of lessens your own fear of your own, you know, inevitable death. And so I think that is one benefit. I think it feels really good and nourishing to take this person you love all the way instead of handing them over at the last moment to a stranger.
Well, it seems like home funerals are how people probably dealt with their dead since the dawn of time. And I'm curious in your research what you've come across about how we got away from that and how it became what it is today.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I can actually say that pretty succinctly. It originally started with the Civil War when the people from the North wanted their sons sent home. They had learned methods of preserving those bodies as they were going to travel on trains, and so that's where it started. The upper classes thought that was disturbing and were not really interested in that, but then soon after that, Abraham Lincoln was embalmed, and he was sent on tour of many states, you know, so thousands of people came out to the train to view his body as he was toured around the East Coast. And so at that point, it became very socially acceptable to have your body embalmed. The chemical industries started refining the embalming process, and then to sort of sell the embalming practice and sell the chemicals more, they were giving classes and licenses to certain people to do this, and then it became very culturally acceptable. And then we also moved from rural areas to urban areas. When a person is not embalmed, you know, their skin just starts to change gradually over time, but, you know, they don't look horrible by any means. They look peaceful, quiet, you know, they look dead, but there's nothing disturbing about that.
Well, that's very true. I mean, when my own father died, it was very important for me to see his body, and we did not have him embalmed. We had him cremated. Mm-hmm. But before he was cremated, my family was able to go in and just be with his body. Mm-hmm. And that was very important, I think, for all of us. And I think it was important that he not have makeup on and look like he was trussed up in some way. Mm-hmm.
But if you do have them at home and you wash their body, it's fine to put makeup on them if you have your own their makeup or your own makeup and you want to put on them.
I think many people probably have home funerals for their pets. Is there anything that we can learn from that?
Yeah, that's a great observation as well, Julie. It's that we already are doing this for our pets, and we probably find that really important. So we already are doing this, and we already see the value of it and the way that we present that to the children. So we just have to take one more step, I think, as this culture is start to do that for each other.
Well, I think that's really all my questions. Is there anything else that I've missed that you want to touch on?
Well, I think one more thing that I'd like to say is that women used to traditionally take care of this, and there are not that many women who are now funeral service practitioners. So, you know, in my perspective, it would be nice if we began to reclaim and rethink about why we don't step up to the plate and start to think about this again and the importance of that role and the importance of us, you know, assisting our families through those times. So that's one last comment.
Okay, well, thanks very much for talking with me today.
You're welcome, Julie. Thank you.
You're tuned to DIY Portland, a monthly show about revolutionary do-it-yourself projects.
My head is pounding. I can't stop the pounding. I think it is going to explode and kill everybody who's in close proximity to the place I call my home. And they'll make a moving made-for-TV movie for a Lifetime all about my life. That ends with an epitaph, one that will make you laugh. That says, great mom, okay wife. And it'll be funny to the people who know me, who know if my body's not burned, my soul will spend an eternity in misery, tethered and bound to this earth. So I'm not a dick or a stick in the mud, always ruining things for my friends. I mustn't forget when I see the sunset that tomorrow it will rise again. So I tattoo instructions on my ass that say, don't ever put this body in a casket. Burn it and put the ashes in a basket and throw them in the Puget Sound. I don't ever want to be
I'm Julie Sabatier. You just heard my interview with Patricia Sweeney. She's a death care educator. She's also vice president of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. When it comes to funerals, we have a lot of choices to make. As for what happens after the funeral, well, it comes down to two basic options: cremation or burial. Sometimes these choices have to be made quickly. When my father died 4 years ago of a sudden heart attack, we decided to have him cremated. My brother Andy told me he and Dad had driven past a cemetery once, and Dad said it was a waste of space. Most cemeteries consist of grass and dirt and rows of gravestones. Beneath them are metal or concrete vaults, insulating caskets made of wood or metal, surrounding bodies pumped full of chemicals. I can see why my dad wouldn't want to buy into all that, but he probably didn't know there was an alternative out there. At green or natural cemeteries, human remains are shrouded or casketed in biodegradable materials. They are buried beneath trees and rocks in a wild place. Had he known about it, I think this option might really have appealed to my dad. And I can see why it would appeal to someone like Cynthia Beale. For 14 years, she ran the Red Barn Natural Grocery in Eugene, Oregon. In 2002, she was named that city's Slug Queen, a kind of mock beauty pageant award based on creativity, flamboyance, and affability. She's a naturally curious person who knows a lot about seeking out sustainable alternatives. Cynthia recently relocated to Portland to start a new venture she's calling the Natural Burial Company. I sat down with her in her showroom, which is under construction and slated to open sometime in December.
The showroom here is going to demonstrate the different kinds of caskets that are available for a green burial, and those could either be used in a cemetery setting or they could be used at a farm burial or a home burial. We have the full range of items from the very inexpensive cardboard cremation containers that are really common in the home funeral movement when people want something they can decorate themselves, all the way up through handmade, hand-painted, artisan-crafted items that are just absolutely beautiful works of art. So I'm bringing in, my favorite product is the Arca EcoPod. It's the recycled newspaper coffin. It's just absolutely gorgeous, and you can see it on our website. And it's covered in a handmade silk paper, and it was designed and originally made by a midwife. And so there is a very strong connection between the midwifery movement and the end-of-life movement.
And when you import products, doesn't that kind of undermine the green part of it by requiring the products to travel so many miles?
Well, that's an interesting point. There's a couple of things that I keep in mind. Number one, we don't grow our own bananas here. We import a lot of things that we want. Number two, we're looking at changing a major paradigm. These are the very first green caskets that are really becoming promoted. And it's going to take a couple of years to catch this on.
And you also work a lot with local artists here in town, is that right?
Oh, yes. One of the things I'm real interested in is seeing the return of artisans and crafters to this field. We have a product line opportunity here of caskets that people are generally willing to pay good money for. So why not pay good money to an artist to decorate a box or to hand make a box or to hand weave a box?
I would think as an artist, and I'm not an artist, but I would feel maybe a little bit strange about creating something that was just going to go in the ground.
Well, yeah, perhaps. Sometimes it's one of the most wonderful things. It's kind of like a Tibetan sand painting. You make this amazingly intricate work of art, and it tells the story as it's being made, and then it's there, and it's appreciated in all its glory, and then it's blown away. And in a sense, that's actually a perfect metaphor for our lives.
And what other steps do you think we need to take in the United States to kind of catch up with countries like the UK that are really on the forefront of this movement?
I think there might be a little bit of a mythology about the potential supposed danger of a dead body. We need to get over that myth. And by looking at England and studying what they're doing over there, I think we can clear that up. About half the cemeteries in the UK right now are owned by public institutions, by cities, by governments. And they would not be burying naturally without a vault, no embalming, if there was any danger to the public. So I think one of the things we can do is look to that model. I think another thing we can do is ask for the option.
Well, where can you go for a green burial here in Oregon? Or in the United States in general, I guess.
Well, there are not a lot of places right now. There are probably about 10 or a dozen natural burial grounds that are official. I'm going to estimate there's probably 50 to 100 or more in the works right now. Here in the Portland area, we're really fortunate. We have Valley Memorial Park in Hillsboro. Was a conventional cemetery up until recently. And they have been now in a four-year process of converting quite a bit of their acreage to a natural burial ground. A number of the pioneer cemeteries and some of the old church and nonprofit cemeteries that are around the state have buried traditionally for a long time, and a number of them don't require a vault or a liner. In the long run, a natural burial takes pre-planning. You can't just walk in right now except for at a place like Valley Memorial and get it off the shelf. Everybody who goes after it for themselves is an activist opening the way for everyone who comes afterward.
And is this another instance like home birth where we in the so-called developed world can learn so much from the so-called third world?
In the developing world, wherever they are still performing their traditional burials, yes, we can learn from them. In fact, in a lot of countries in Asia and the Middle East that bury, they don't even use a casket. They do a shroud burial.
Is it legal in the United States to bury someone on your own property?
The federal government has given the power to individual states to make their own laws. The state of Oregon does permit burial on your own private property. I'm not really an advocate of seeing people bury on their own land. I mean, if you're excavating in your backyard that you bought from somebody and they've buried their aunt there 20 years ago and you find her in your new tomato garden, you have to call the sheriff and there has to be a big forensics investigation and murder has to be ruled out. And there are a number of things that stimulates. So while I like the idea of us having the freedom to do it, I think this is one of those places where we might exercise some judgment and say, well, maybe I would be better off planted with a bunch of my friends, turning into a forest that I know is going to be relatively difficult to cut down.
And that being said, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are curious
yes.
about what kind of restrictions and freedoms you do have mm-hmm. when it comes to burying on your own property. So I just want to delve into that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
How deep do you have to dig the hole?
Well, at this point, I'm not sure that there is a specific depth requirement. The soil web activity generally takes place in the first 18 to 20 inches of soil. And so having your hole down 3 feet is probably about as deep as you want to go in order to biodegrade.
Obviously, embalming is not a green burial practice. It's not very green at all. But is there a restriction if a body has been embalmed that you can't put it in certain areas? I imagine green cemeteries don't allow it.
I think the thing to remember from a green point of view is that one of its primary chemical ingredients is formalin, is formaldehyde, and that does kill bacteria. And we have to remember that the soil is alive with bacteria. We're just not dissolving in a soup because that's what we do when we hit the dirt. We're dissolving because we're turning into the dinner of the next creatures, the tiny creatures on the food chain. And that formaldehyde, when they eat that, that kills them. You know, we have artificial ingredients and we're not very good to eat anymore.
Even if someone is not embalmed, the body holds on to a lot of toxic chemicals. Is that a concern with green burial as well?
We do have a lot of chemicals. We have a lot of synthetics in us now. We dye. I think we have a lot of DDT in us. We have a lot of dioxin. We have a lot of heavy metals. We certainly have mercury and we have lead. I do think it's probably a pretty safe bet that a tree planted on top of me is going to do a pretty good job of pulling apart most of that stuff and breaking it down. And I have to say, one of the interesting kingdoms that we've only just now begun to learn about are the mushroom kingdom, the fungi. Paul Stamets has done a lot of research on the fungi. And fungi deconstruct chemicals incredibly well.
Is there a cost benefit to green burial?
Well, I certainly think that in the big equation of full cost accounting with the planet, yes, there's a huge cost benefit to green burial. First of all, if you're buying a biodegradable casket, the materials that go into it are often either renewable or they're recycled, and they're certainly natural. If your money that you use to spend on a plot is going to take care of that land and mostly nurture a forest and a habitat rather than pay for mowing, lawn maintenance, and groundskeeping over time, I think that's a cost benefit. It can be a lot cheaper, obviously, if you use a cardboard container and you're doing everything yourself and you're going into a green burial ground that has almost no maintenance, you can probably save a lot of money. And so if we're looking at a dollar-to-dollar comparison, I would say right now you may not be able to find a really inexpensive green burial, but I'm going to guess that within 5 years, you're certainly going to be able to find one.
And we focused a lot on burial, mm-hmm. but I want to ask about some of the other options, such as cremation. What is clean cremation?
There are cremation facilities that have a very minimal toxic footprint. In other words, very little comes out of the flu, if anything. That usually means that there's a two-stage burning process. It also means that there would be a very sophisticated, very capable, very expensive filters in the stack that can capture things like mercury that comes out of our teeth if we don't remove the mercury fillings before we're cremated.
And then there's another option, which is burial at sea. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and what kind of containers you offer if people want to do that?
Are you talking now about the ash burial or are you talking about the body burial?
Well, I guess we should talk about both.
Yeah. Okay. At this point, there are a couple of different interment possibilities. Something that got started in Florida, which is really cool, is artificial reef balls that are made out of generally some sort of cement amalgam, and they have lots and lots of little niches in them so that coral and other creatures can colonize the reef balls. And there will be a hole set inside the reef ball where the urn could go in and the ashes could be put in. There are biodegradable water burial urns for ashes. As far as burial of bodies at sea, there are some regulations around that. This is probably not the best format to give all of the rules. A burial at sea is possible, and it's currently also being done.
Was there anything else you want to tell me that I didn't ask you about?
I really want to encourage people to check this out thoroughly for themselves. This is our last thing. We really do have the right to do it the way we want to do it, in line with our values. I want people to know that we're going to be doing workshops here at the Natural Burial Company. We'll talk about anything that has to do with a natural end.
Great. Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was an interview with Cynthia Beal, who runs the Natural Burial Company in Portland. Cynthia is working on a book called Be a Tree, the Manual for Turning Yourself into a Forest, which will be published next fall. Thanks for tuning in for another edition of DIY Portland. I'm Julie Sabatier, and I recorded all the material for this show and produced it with help from Brian Kramer. Nick Jaina composed our theme music, and Kimya Dawson gave us permission to use her song Underground for this episode. Additional music was provided by Jason Leonard and Dylan and Richie Young. If you want to find out more about Patricia Sweeney's death care education services, visit her website, spiraloflife.org. To get more information about green burial products, visit Cynthia Beal's website, naturalburialcompany.com. You can find lots of information about the home funeral and green burial movements from the Funeral Consumers Alliance at funerals.org. DIY Portland broadcasts the third Thursday of every month on KBOO Community Radio. To make a donation to support this all-volunteer effort, please visit destinationdiy.org, brought to you by Marianne Naylor of Church of Girl. Thanks for listening.